Today begins the month of Elul, which is 1 month until Rosh Hashanah, which means a lot of things to us as Jews, including there's one ritual that comes up as we lead up to the high holidays called Kaparot. We in LA don't tend to do it so much, but especially if you go to Jerusalem, the Shuk, you can see it, you can get online, you can do it. You wave a live chicken over your head, and you say some words of forgiveness, and the chicken is slaughtered and given to a family who wouldn't be able to afford it otherwise, to be able to have a big meal before the fast day. For those of us who are not so used to being near slaughter, it's a pretty big jump, but for a long time, everyone would have been relatively near the actual process of preparing the meat that they eat. So it wouldn't have been that out there. And there's a story about a young chassid, a young student in the Hasidic world who went to go talk to Rabbi Elimelech of Lizinsk. And he said, "Rabbi, I've studied under you for years, and I watch you do the mitzvot, and you do each one in such a special and unique way. Please let me come with you to see how you do kaparot. I want to learn from the master." And the rabbi of Lizinsk said, "The truth is, I do it like everyone else. That particular one, I don't think I do in any special way. But if you want to see the most special kaparot, you have to go to Moshe, the innkeeper." "Okay, I'll go." And he goes and he talks to Moshe, and Moshe says, "If you want, you can sit in the corner and watch." He says, "Okay." Moshe sits down in front of the fire at his inn with two notebooks. Both of them tattered, both of them written in regularly, and he picks up the first one and reads aloud a list of relatively minor offenses against God that he has committed. Times when he hasn't meant his prayers. Times when maybe he could have been more careful not to say, "Oh God." But then he cries and he throws the notebook in the fire. The next notebook, equally tattered, is much larger. And he reads aloud God's sins. He reads aloud all the ways in which this world is broken. And then he throws that notebook in the fire, cries some more, and stands up and says, "Now I am ready for Yom Kippur." I first heard this story 10 years ago, and I come back to it every Elul. At least partly because I am simultaneously compelled by this image of this regular Joe Schmo innkeeper keeping an account of God's sins. I'm simultaneously compelled and totally baffled. How is this a story we tell in our tradition? What does it mean to hold God accountable for sins? What do we do with it? And then I came to this week's Parsha, and I want to read one sentence, one verse. There is a lot of concern for idolatry in the Bible, and particularly in this week's Parsha, Moses lays out that if there is a whole town of idol worship, of Jews who've gone over to the dark side and are worshiping idols, you have to go in the town and destroy everything. Kill everyone, throw all their stuff in the middle of the town, and light it on fire. And then it says, "V'lo yidbak biyadcha b'me'uma min hacherem l'man yashuv Adonai mecherun apo benatan lach rachamim berachmecha v'hirbecha kasher nishba la'avotav." In English, "Let nothing that has been doomed stick to your hand in order that the Lord may turn from God's blazing anger and show you compassion." In order that. I don't know if you caught it, but that's a theologically problematic moment. You people have to do something on earth so that God can act a certain way in heaven. That's huge. We as individuals can affect the way God acts and feels according to this verse in the Bible. Which means if you go back to my story about Kaparot, why was the innkeeper crying before he threw the list of God's sins into the fire? He was crying because he did not act in enough ways that God might show us mercy, to turn from anger to mercy and give us the gifts of a more perfect world. The story and the verse is a challenge to each of us in the month of Elul leading up to the high holidays, those days when we put on our finest, when we come to our seats and we hear the best music and the prayers that have been written for centuries upon centuries to try and make us better people. This is the month we get ready. And so today, in this sermon, I'm going to try and do something I don't normally do, which is to give practical advice. Four things that you might try for the month of Elul. It's probably not a title of an article that will make it on the cover of Cosmo, but we're working on it. Four things, two pairs, body and soul. Two things that you can do in the physical world and two things you can do in the spiritual world. I want to start with the extremely concrete and work to the more abstract. Outside, just outside on the table with all the flyers, I placed a new table with volunteer opportunities. I picked six organizations that I both knew well and were able to get me flyers in about a week's notice that do great work. And all of them have different levels of commitment. You can be involved for the whole year. You can do one thing depending on the involvement. To highlight a few, Food Forward is an organization that goes, we live in LA, where fruit trees grow on their own. Many of you might even have fruit trees in your home and the fruit falls to the ground. This organization goes to those trees, collects the fruit, and makes sure food banks like SOVA have it. And so it's not just the pre-freeze-dried, all of the stuff that these people get, it is actual fruit. So you can do it in two ways. One, if you have the fruit trees, there's a flyer outside. Call them and say, please come. They will come and collect the fruit. And the other is, they have constant picks going on every weekend. You can sign up and join a bunch of other people and do a mitzvah, collect the fruit, and get it to those who might not otherwise have fresh fruit. Chai Lifeline, on the other end, that's a long-term commitment. You have to go through training. Chai Lifeline goes to children with cancer and meets their family, not as the medical support. We live in LA. We have some of the best cancer doctors in the world. But as the every other kind of support. They run a camp in the summer so these kids can go to a place where there are chemo specialists and still live a regular life. They organize volunteers to meet you in the hospital with chicken soup, to take the siblings out to the movies and do fun things because a sibling of a child with cancer, how much fun does that kid get to have? Great work. Vista Del Mar works with kids and adults in all kinds of needs. Their work is there. And you may not know this, but our own Ralph Resnick, our ritual director, every Friday morning goes across the street to the Belmont Living Facilities and runs a kind of Friday night services for those with dementia and Alzheimer's. You can join him. He'd be happy for the company any Friday morning. There's also cards for SOVA where you can volunteer in their food pantries, and the National Council for Jewish Women has a series of ongoing volunteer opportunities which you can do great things. And that's just a few to scrape the surface. Challenge number one, the month of Elul, Find a time and volunteer. Do something with your friends, with your family, whatever it might be, and give of your time. The next one gets a little more abstract. We get the laws of kashrut in this parsha. God says something, Moses says something very interesting in the Torah. Moses says two things. One, Moses says specifically, you can't just do whatever you want. That's almost a direct quote from the Bible. And Moses says, you might think with all of these laws of sacrifice that the only way you can eat meat is if you go to the temple and do a sacrifice. But it's not true. You can do kosher slaughter wherever you want. But don't eat the blood. Whatever you do, don't eat the blood of the animal, just the meat. And I want to take that as a charge for you in your life. We as Jews believe in partaking in the physical world. Delicious things like ice cream sundaes. Apparently I want ice cream at the moment. That's what's stuck in my head. Other physical pleasures, hiking in the world, exercising, playing sports, all of these things are actually encouraged by our tradition. You should be a part of this physical world, but don't drink the blood. What I mean by that is, challenge yourself. What is the thing that you do most in this world to experience the physical joys we have? And see if you can find a way to make that a little holier, to lift it up a little bit, to limit yourself in a way that makes sure when you're doing that, you are still doing that for the sake of divinity. Now we turn inward. I've given you two recommendations for our bodies, two for our souls. Rav Nachman of Breslov had a practice he called Hit Bodedut. He said before services, he would go out into the field and talk aloud to God. Go and talk out. We talk inwardly. We have our quiet moments where we try and talk to whatever God might be, where we try and talk to ourselves, where we try and hear our conscience. But it is a different experience, and you get to a different place when you go somewhere and you talk out loud. Now, we live in LA. There's not a lot of places that are quiet, so I'm going to give you a secret. A way you can do it, even in LA, even as you walk around the Century City Mall. Just hold your cell phone to your ear. And keep talking. No one will listen. It won't look weird. But you will be on the phone with God. God probably won't answer explicitly, but talking out loud will change the way you interact with God. And the last piece of advice is to ask yourselves four questions. The Talmud says that when we die, our soul goes before God and gets asked four questions in these order. Spend the next month actually figuring out what the answers might be. Number one, did you conduct your business affairs honestly? It doesn't say, did you succeed or fail in business? It means when you went home at the end of the day from work, was your head held up high? Did you treat the people you work with right? Did you pay your employees on time? First question, did you conduct your business affairs honestly? Question two, did you set aside time to study Torah? Not did you study lots of Torah, not did you learn lots of things, but did you make it a part of your life to study our religion? And I would broaden a little bit, did you set aside time for Judaism in your life? In the next month, 15 minutes a week, what can you add in? 15 minutes a week, could you add in tefillin in the morning? Could you look up a YouTube on a rabbi teaching something? Or someone smarter than a rabbi, like a regular person. What? Could you read the Parsha on Saturday morning instead of talking to the person next to you like I do on the Bima? Three. Did you try to create a family? Now, I don't think this means, did you try and get married and have kids? Although hopefully that's something that's a part of many of our lives. I think it means, did you try and find people in your life that you called family? That you put before yourself? That you put as first in your life? Did you try and go out in the world and collect people and bring them close and draw those social networks close together? Fourth, sometimes the hardest. Did you hope for the world's redemption? In the next month, can you set aside time every day to make sure you are hopeful? This is both the great gift and the great challenge of religion. Judaism looks at this broken, difficult, dark, confusing, violent world and believes it could be better and perhaps will be. And it knows the secret that fundamentally it never will be unless you believe it can be. So for the fourth question, will you set aside time in yourself to force yourself to be hopeful that tomorrow will be better than today? So I go back to Moshe the innkeeper, throwing his book of God's sins in the fire. And I encourage each of us this month to look out in the world and see how it is broken and imperfect, and figure out how we can make ourselves better so that we can become God's partners, that we can bring out the part of ourselves created in God's image and make the world better. Be it with our volunteering, by limiting ourselves, by asking ourselves those four good questions, or by talking one-on-one with God. The month of Elul is often an acronym. Ani ledodi vedodi li. I am my beloved and my beloved is mine. How can we make that true for God? God is my beloved and I am my beloved's. This next month, how can we be God's partner? Shabbat Shalom.